Well, perhaps God's people, the Israelites, were asking similar questions when they found themselves in the middle of nowhere at Mount Sinai after God had graciously rescued them out of slavery in Egypt and made a covenant with them. How are we going to get home? We know that God promised to Abraham back in Genesis 12 that he'd give us our own land, but how are we going to get there? Well, in our passage tonight, God responds to this question by promising three things. He says, I'm going to be the one to guide you, and I'm going to guide you with an angel. Secondly, he says, I am going to protect you with an alliance. And thirdly, I'm going to be the one who fulfills all your needs with an abundance of blessings. An angel, an alliance, and an abundance of blessings. But in all this, God reminds his people that they must be faithful to him alone. If they try and find the way themselves, they will get lost and things won't be good. So let's consider God's first promise. We read in verse 20, look with me, that God is sending a guide, someone ahead of his people to lead the way. Now, when I think of a guide-like figure, I think of a man with a European accent and often a yellow umbrella leading tourists around major cities throughout the world. But what God is promising here is far more than a tour guide. He's promising an angel, someone to lead the way. And we get the idea here that this isn't just any angel. We're told that the name of God himself is in him. The name of Yahweh is in this angel. It almost seems that this angel and God are one and the same. We get this hint by the use of pronouns. If you look at the text, he and I changes with the pronouns. For example, verse 22, listen carefully to what he says and do all I say. God's making the promise that he himself will be present with his people as they make their journey home. But what exactly does this presence look like? Well, God promises his people that he's prepared a place for them, a home, and that he's going to guard them from inevitable threats like bandits and robbers along the way and show them the way that they need to go to arrive safely. Now, these are pretty amazing promises for the Israelites who are heading towards the promised land. But obviously, as Christians today, followers of God, we're not moving towards a promised land like the ancient Israelites. So how are these promises relevant for us? Do we have the assurance that God has prepared a place for us? Has he promised to guard us on the journey? Has he promised to show us the way there? Well, yeah, Jesus himself, God in the flesh, promises us in John's gospel, I am going before you to prepare a place for you. He says he's going to protect us along the way, and he shows us the way that we're going to get there. In John, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the way. Jesus is the one we need to follow to reach our home, which God has prepared for us, our true home in the new creation. The book of Hebrews speaks of Jesus as our trailblazer, the one who, through his death and resurrection, goes ahead of us, clearing the way, protecting us from dangers, and bringing us to the place that he's prepared for us. But Jesus doesn't just promise to be some distant, fuzzy figure at the front that we've just got to keep an eye on. He doesn't say, all right, guys, I'm going to be in a striped maroon shirt about 100 metres in front of you, and you've just got to keep your eye on me, and it'll all be good. No. He says at the end of Matthew's gospel, surely I am with you always till the very end of the age. And then we get to Acts 2 and God pours out his spirit on us, his spirit to intimately be with us and guide us. This is an intimate presence that guides us, not some distant figure at the front. But there's a warning that follows. In verse 21, as Jesus is our guide, it makes sense, right, that he's the one that we need to listen to and follow if we want to arrive home safely. Just like God instructs the Israelites not to rebel against his angel, we need to pay attention to our guide, Jesus, and not rebel against him. But how exactly do we do this? I'm sure we've all been in situations where we think, all right, so I've got two good options here. Maybe you're applying for two jobs and you think, okay, so both of these jobs seem to be God-honoring. Neither of them are inherently sinful, but how do I know which one to pick? What if I accidentally go against God's will? What if I accidentally, it looks like I'm not listening to God? Well, we don't have to worry about that because God's given us his word. If we go to his word, that gives us everything we need to know. We have his word, we have prayer to speak to him. If we base our faith on these things, he will guard us and bring us to the place he's prepared for us. So God's first promise to the Israelites is an angel, which we see as a promise to all his people that he'll be present and guide us towards home. His second promise, as we read from verse 22, is an alliance, a military alliance, in fact. Now, we've got to remember that Israel was a pretty small and insignificant nation compared to those nations that they would be required to conquer on their entry into the promised land. They simply didn't have the manpower or the resources to take down these high-powered nations. It's a little bit like the struggle that Australia would likely face today if we had to go into battle with North Korea or a country like that. So we have an alliance with America and some other countries, some bigger countries that could step in and defend us if we were to come into contact with a country like North Korea. Simply by the size of a country like America compared to Australia, we would hopefully be able to win any battle. Now, the relationship between Israel and God is sort of similar. Israel is small and quite insignificant compared to the nations they'll be required to conquer. So God says, you know what, I'm going to step in and fight for you. He promises to be on their side. As Paul reminds us in Romans, if God is for us, who can be against us? They have the God of the universe on their side. Now, some of you might be thinking, that's all well and good. That's great that God's going to step in and fight for the Israelites. But how can it be fair that the people currently living in the land are kicked out in order to make way for God's people? That's a fair question, right? Well, let me ask you, who's the agent behind the destruction of Israel's enemies? It's God, right? The creator and ruler of everything. God, in fact, proclaims back in Genesis that the people living in the promised land had been reveling in sin for centuries and that he'd actually patiently postponed his judgment on them. The practices of these people were incredibly inhumane and widespread. They were involved in all kinds of horrible activities like rampant incest and child sacrifice. God had patiently withdrawn his judgment on these people, but he decided that with his own people, the Israelites, and bringing them into the promised land, this was the way that he was going to bring judgment on these people who are currently in the land. Now, we've got to be careful not to apply this promise to modern day warfare, though. This was a specific promise to Israel at a specific time for a specific purpose. If you'd like to explore this particular issue further, I can recommend Chris Wright's book, The God I Don't Understand, where he goes into more depth about this. So God promises to win the battle against Israel's enemies to ensure that they'll be able to enter their home in the promised land. But as God's people today, we're obviously not required to conquer land that God's promised us in order to, you know, get into that land and have our enemies defeated. So how's this relevant for us? Well, who's our ultimate enemy? Satan, right? God has promised that through Jesus' death and resurrection, the victory over Satan has been won, which means that we are able to reach our true home. Jesus has won the battle, which means that if we put our faith in him, though our physical bodies will die, we'll be raised to life with Christ and enter into our true home with him. just like Israel didn't have a hope of winning the battle against their enemies, we didn't have any hope of winning the battle against sin and death and Satan. So God stepped in and won it for us with Jesus' death and resurrection. He's the one who made it possible for us to enter into the new creation, our true home. But in response, we have an obligation to holy living. In verse 24, God instructs his people to not only resist worshipping other gods, but to completely demolish and smash any pagan instruments of worship to pieces. Items of worship that could draw their attention away from the one true God. So why does God ask his people to go to such extreme lengths? Why doesn't he just say, all right, I know you've got some items there that you could use to worship with, but just put them behind the trees and that's fine, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Why does he ask them to destroy them? Well, because these instruments of worship would have been a massive temptation. It's kind of hard for us to understand, right, that the ancient people would want to worship like blocks of stone. But in ancient times, the people thought, all right, well, if we've got this physical God in front of us that we can see, and then we can physically give sacrifices to the God and then see our crops grow in return, it's pretty good, right? There's also the fact that the rituals with these pagan gods often involved sexual rituals, which was pretty attractive for the people. God knows this great temptation, so he doesn't simply instruct his people to put anything out of sight, but to literally smash any item that could draw their allegiance away from God. Now, we face a lot of distractions in our world, distractions that draw our attention away from God. So we must heed the same warning. What instruments of worship in our lives are drawing our allegiance away from God? What do we need to smash? Well, if we look around at our culture, it's pretty easy to see that our world worships sex, right? For example, pornography is something that's used widely and seen as acceptable and even celebrated by many in our Australian culture, which perhaps makes it even more dangerous than other things that could draw us away from God. In the 2008 film Fireproof, the main character is a husband who's addicted to internet pornography. Now, when he realizes the damage that his addiction is causing to his marriage, he takes a baseball bat and literally smashes his computer to pieces and then throws the pieces in the rubbish bin. It was no good for him to just move his computer into another room or just block particular web pages or not go on particular websites. He had to physically destroy that which was causing him to sin. So whether it's a struggle with internet pornography or any other kind of sexual sin or any other kind of sin, we need to think about what we need to destroy. As we journey toward our true home, we have an obligation to be a holy people, which can't wait until tomorrow. So on this journey, we've seen that God firstly promises an angel to guide his people, the promise of his presence. Secondly, he promises an alliance that he will be victorious in battle over his people's enemies who stand in the way of them reaching their home. Thirdly and finally, from verse 25, God promises to supply all the needs of his people by pouring out an abundance of blessings on them. In response to their worship of him, God promises food and water, the alleviation of barrenness and sickness, and a full lifespan. So does that mean that if we worship God and we follow his word today, then we will receive an abundance of blessings? Well, yes, but we've got to take into consideration that things look a little bit different for us now than they did for these Israelites. Of course, this is because under the old covenant, which the Israelites were under, that was a different time before Jesus. We now live in a time after Jesus under the new covenant. Now, under the old covenant, while suffering certainly wasn't alleviated, God did use earthly blessings to point to greater and eternal spiritual blessings which would come under the new covenant. So we don't need to be jealous of the Old Testament people and go, oh my goodness, they had things so much better than we have them now. It would be like us with, you know, a S8 mobile and our friend with a mobile Nokia brick and us going, you know what, I actually want what they have. I know that snake's appealing, but, you know, I think the S8, we'd all take the S8, right? But regardless of the perks of the old model of the old covenant, we've been given a serious upgrade under the new covenant. Blessings were good under the old covenant, but they're even better now. Under the old covenant, God promises blessing on his people's food and water. But under the new covenant, through Jesus, we've been promised the much greater blessing of the bread of life and of living water, which will never run out. Under the old covenant, God promises to alleviate miscarriage and barrenness. But under the new covenant, family has been transformed and we've been promised the greater blessing of all being members of the family of God and all being given spiritual children. Under the old covenant, God promises to take away the earthly sickness of his people, but they would all eventually die, right? Under the new covenant, we've been promised that anybody who puts their hope in Jesus will not see decay, but will receive eternal life. When we're faced with inevitable sufferings and trials as we journey towards our true home, we can rest in God's promise that he blesses us abundantly in ways that don't necessarily manifest themselves in physical, material blessings. In fact, sometimes it's quite the opposite, but in much greater spiritual blessings. But again, there's a warning. It's very clear that God is the agent here in bringing these blessings to fruition. In a wise way, as we see in verse 30, little by little, through his sovereign power over all people and all nature. In fact, it isn't until verse 31 that he finally instructs his people to act. He says, I will give into your hands the people who live in your land, and you will drive them out before you. Up until this point in the passage, it's always God saying, I will do this, I will do this, I will do this. So in verses 32 to 33, God commands his people not to work outside of his will by making deals with other gods or people to try and bring about blessing for themselves and not trust God's provision. Why? Because these people would be a snare to them. Making deals with these other people would interrupt and interfere their own relationship with God. Now we see later on as we read in the biblical narrative that it was incredibly challenging for the Israelites to resist the urge to make deals with their neighbouring enemy nations to try and bring about blessings for themselves. For example, we read in Joshua 9 that the Israelites made a treaty of peace with their neighbouring enemies, the Gibeonites, and we're told that they didn't inquire of the Lord first. Now, this, of course, backfires terribly, and it leads to Israel's own deception. Now, it's just as easy for us to do similar things today. Maybe we agree to tell a white lie for our boss because she's promised that if we do, then we'll get a promotion. Maybe we make a deal with a friend at school or uni that will buy them a ticket to the footy if they give us a copy of their essay for us to pass off as our own work. Maybe you agree to let your accountant forge your tax return just a little bit so you get a few extra dollars. We are a holy people called by God, and we have no business making sneaky deals against God's will to try and bring about blessings for ourselves. God has promised that he will provide us with everything we need as we journey toward our true home. So how are we going to get home? Well, God's promised us how. For the old covenant people heading towards the promised land, these promises came in the form of an angel to lead the way, an alliance with God to defeat their enemies in the land, and an abundance of earthly blessings. Now, since Jesus has come, for us living under the new covenant, these promises have been amped up to a whole new level. Instead of an angel to guide us home, we have Jesus to lead the way and the Holy Spirit living within us to provide us with intimate guidance. Instead of the promise of a military alliance with God against our earthly enemies, God's promised us that through Jesus' death and resurrection, he's won the ultimate victory over our enemy, Satan. And instead of an abundance of earthly blessings, God's promised us an abundance of spiritual blessings, which far outweigh anything that's come before. However, God makes it clear that we can't make the journey home alone. Firstly, we must follow our guide, Jesus, faithfully and not rebel against him by doing things that don't align with his word. Secondly, we must smash any idols that distract us from keeping our eyes fixed on him alone. And finally, we must not try and bring blessings on ourselves by making deals outside of God's will, but trust God alone for his provision. We are a holy people, and we must seek to live lives worthy of the incredible promises that our God has poured out on us. As we journey toward our new home in the new creation, we can rest in God's promises that he guides, he helps, and he blesses us as we faithfully follow him. Amen.